Note to Benny, your bi-coastal podcast focusing on the art and entertainment worlds. Mostly on the art world, but Nate's gotten himself caught up in the hills of Hollywood and all the shenanigans out there. What's happening, man?
I've gone full Hollywood. It feels great. I might never leave.
Do you have a screenwriting gig yet somewhere or what?
I can pick one of those up pretty easy. It's just the West Coast living is really where it's at. It's sunny. I'm in the hills. It's great, man. It's wonderful.
I'm worried that we might have lost you.
After a night like last night, it's hard to go back, dude. I mean, like this, when it is happening here, it's fucking happening. And Oscar weekend, I got to tell you, shit is lit.
It's really when you shine. You prepared your whole life, really, for this week. You're in training all year long. You're at small cocktail parties, little social events, seeing B and C list celebrities, and it all leads to this week. This is your fucking Final Four. This is your jam, man. Are you feeling good? You're feeling in shape?
I'm feeling so good. I'm just going to lean back, hit three after three after three. Just, you know, going to, you know, put 20 points on the board right at the start.
Guess we should really start with where our usual podcast focusing on the art world and your present environment, Hollywood, really intersect on a yearly basis the Thursday before Oscar Sunday for time immemorial. Belongs to one man and one man only, Mr. Larry Gagosian. I know that you were there for his opening last night, and I'm guessing the dinner afterwards. Tell us what the scene was like.
It was pretty incredible. As you might have read at this point, I wrote a story for Vanity Fair about this show of work by Jean-Michel Basquiat at Gagosian Gallery here in Los Angeles, focusing on works that he made from 1982 to 1984 here in LA, some of which were made at Larry's home on Market Street in Venice Beach. It's a story that is well known. It's very mythologized over the years. Madonna was around. She was dating Jean-Michel at the time. But there's never been a show curated with that focus. And so it was really amazing to see. They got crazy loans from the Whitney, from the Broad, from a number of private collectors, from the Basquiat family. And the opening last night was crazy. Oh, my God. It was like, I was walking up Beverly Hills, you know, usually a pretty calm place at night. You know, there's some people eating at Mr. Chow or the new Cipriani, which is quite elegant. It was like a block party outside of the gallery. There was lines down the block and they had to keep on snaking them. Like, you know, I think it was like beyond any opening I've ever seen in LA. Seriously. It was, you know.
Did you walk in the front door? Or did they have to slip you in the back alleyway there?
I walked right in. Thank God there were some wonderful press people and just some great gallery staffers who were helping the VIPs get in. You know, I walked in with Johanna Burton, the director of MoCA, and her great husband, Tim Griffin. And then the scene inside was just, it was electric. I think every LA-based Gagosian artist was in attendance at the opening, plus some from New York. You know, there was Jane Fonda was there for some reason. I think she collects. It was pretty cool to see her. The work looked great. I mean, like, it was a really electric feeling in the gallery.
I'm sure. I mean, it goes to show again that galleries and private foundations can do these kinds of loan intensive shows that public museums kind of really can't afford to in a lot of cases anymore. I know for this show, for example, by reading your story, the curator spoke, you know, each and every picture that got flown in had to have a courier, had to have, mm-hmm. you know, dedicated flight for it, not a dedicated plane, but, you know, reserve flights, which are very expensive as opposed to just the first available space for a picture flying. I mean, very, very expensive. The insurance premiums alone, I mean, ever since, Basquiat's prices have elevated, just makes all these things very, very priceless. And in this case, it's a show that really, it only probably only has two pictures available in it that you could potentially purchase at best. Mm-hmm. I don't know which those two pictures are. I have my guesses. You noticed that you noted that there is a loan from Herb and Lenore Shore, who have been collectors of Jean-Michel's work since the beginning, mm-hmm. and they're still around. I know them. I've gone on a couple of snipe hunts trying to secure one of their paintings for auction sale, which is a very time-consuming process that led to a number that was not in reality. I love them. They're real passionate, amazing collectors. And they've had tomorrow's price in mind for the past 30 years. But I wonder if that's one of them that's potentially for sale, maybe another. But a lot of them are from, as you said, the Broad, from museums and families that really have no sense in selling. So it's just just interesting to me that the Gower choose to do this. Kind of like the Picasso show they just had this past fall in New York. There's another blockbuster. And obviously, you know, something like the Rothko show at the Foundation Louis Vuitton, which, you know, will never able to be replicated just because of the cost and the the complexity of the logistics. And I'm sure that's why all the people were lined up.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is just a sort of once in a lifetime chance for Angelinos to see this work that was made here that, you know, has since been dispersed around the world and is now coming back home to Los Angeles. It was also just like a celebration of Larry, kind of. I mean, like, he organized the show with Fred Hoffman, who was really integral in helping Jean-Michel sort of make some prints and silk screens when he was in L.A. working with Larry in the early 80s, you know. It's not so often that Larry himself secures these loans for the show and actually is the curator of the show itself. And there were vitrines, you know, showing like, you know, the hotel bills that Jean-Michel racked up on Larry's dime, you know, trips to the art supply stores, a flight that he had to buy Madonna, you know, like, and so I think it was like a personal show for him, which was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really cool bookending, perhaps, you know. Well, Jean-Michel wasn't the very beginning of his career. It was really, you know, him, you know, Jean-Michel staying at his house and the work that Larry was able to get out of him and put out into the world from the West Coast was like really what put him on the highest level of the map of the art world. And then to see this very personal group of pictures that were made either in his home or out in L.A. during that period, I think must have been quite affecting for Larry as he begins, you know, as he creeps towards, you know, his later decades, hopefully, of life. So it's a beautiful thing. It is super personal. And I know it's a passion for him. You know, it's easy to talk about Larry as, you know, as kind of this, you know, mega gallerist and, you know, read these profiles of him. But everything that I have experienced, and I like to talk kind of smack about that too, but everything that I have experienced personally is that he is first and foremost a lover of really great art, and his business acumen all draws directly from that. And if he didn't have that true love and understanding of what makes a great picture, he wouldn't be nearly as successful as he has been.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I walked through the show with Larry and that was really, really special. And he clearly has this sort of, you know, attachment to these works, but also just loves looking at them. But then when we went into the back room and there was a new Jordan Wolfson on the wall, he was equally enthused. He was like, oh, my God, this is an amazing Jordan. I mean, like, he just like loves art. He loves working with his artists. You know, and yeah, he loves selling this shit, obviously, but like you have to have the passion there first. And so it's really cool to just like sort of watch that in real time.
It's interesting to me that given the limits of real estate in Gagosi and Beverly Hills and the massive draw that the Jean-Michel show was going to be, that wall space in the back room was given to one of my favorite artists, Jordan. That tells me something about the world and about Larry.
Yeah, totally. And as we mentioned, or I mentioned this in the story, traditionally, after this Oscar show, there's a dinner that Larry hosts at Mr. Chow, the classic restaurant that we are both huge fans of, both in New York and Los Angeles. The LA one is really special, though. It's just
one
like
of the greatest rooms
room.
In American restaurant history, full stop. Continue.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's just like, it's incredible to be in there. It's just, you know, it's got the history, it's got these, you know, the incredible checkered tile floor.
And as you mentioned, like Michael Chow was friends with Jean-Michel, and that specific location was one of Jean-Michel's favorite restaurants.
It really was. I mean, he loved the one in New York as well. There's a great scene in Julian Schnabel's very, very good movie, Basquiat, set in Mr. Chow in New York. But when he was in L.A., you know, he would go to Mr. Chow all the time. Larry told me that it was his favorite restaurant in L.A. Like, and, you know, there were some good restaurants in L.A. at the time. Spago was really hidden, you know, but that was where he liked to hang out. So to, you know, have the dinner there, I think, was also very special, you know, and everyone in L.A. was there.
Did the good people at Gagosian find you a seat at dinner?
I was at the dinner. I was seated next to Sarah Watson, our old friend who works at the gallery, and Jim Shaw, who was a great dinner companion. Let me tell you, that guy's got incredible stories. We talked about the punk scene in Detroit in the 60s, like, you know, like all this crazy shit. Talked about just like L.A. esoterica. He was sitting next to Eddie Ruscha, Ed Ruscha's son, also, you know, really cool guy, great person to sit next to at dinner. I was seated across from the real estate mocker Jay Lux, whose name is plastered across the city because he is representing so many, you know, for lease properties.
Commercial, yeah, he's a commercial real estate agent. His name's always, you know, for 10 years he's been at the height of the game. I didn't know he was at the level where he was getting invites to the Larry Oscar party.
He buys a lot, man. Like he's a passionate art collector now. I think it's something that he's gotten into in the last few years, but he definitely knows his shit. And it was fun to chat with him also about real estate. And you know, he like is clearly like an enthusiast about all things LA. He also was the one who first posted the footage of the Tesla Cybertruck slamming into the Beverly Hills Hotel sign. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, come on. Of course I did. Perhaps the most 2024 picture ever imaginable, summing up everything that's going on in the world. Great image. Very
Wonderful.
Cool. Anyone acting appropriately at dinner?
No one acting. No one.
Boo.
No one acting
Did Larry give a
appropriately,
speech?
Larry gave a really great speech. You know, he was sitting next to his friend Al Pacino. And he just talked about how much, you know, Basquiat meant to him. He also mentioned that they've never done a show, an Oscars show of an estate of an artist who's not with us, which was interesting because, you know, that's part of the Gagosian program, certainly. I think that that show has been focused on hyper contemporary artists or, you know, artists who are, you know, can be present in the room. And the fact that, you know, Jean-Michel obviously wasn't there, but there was still this incredible amount of demand and energy and people wanted to see it. I think that was really cool for him, you know, and for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I did a little Googling in advance of the show opening. I realized that Jean-Michel Basquiat's girlfriend at the time, one Madonna, was performing in Los Angeles. Did she make it to the show or dinner? Did you see her there?
She did not. There was one person who I'll leave their name out of it who was in contact with Madonna at the opening, sending her stuff. So she was very aware of the show and all the ephemera, including her plane ticket. I think that, you know, she couldn't make it from the Kia Forum after the show to dinner. You know, it's tough. I mean, that's
LA
a
needs
pretty.
more, it needs more helicopter service for private individuals,
Right.
I'd argue.
Yes. That would have helped.
Well, that's a bummer. I was kind of like fantasizing of her showing up and being the star in the dinner, maybe like popping out a quick kind of you know, song for the people. I was at a, you know, speaking of singers and cabaret, I was at an interesting art world adjacent event, I would call it, last night. A
Oh,
sort of
yeah?
surprise event. Yeah. My friend Rashid and I were supposed to have dinner, and he's like, "Oh, I forgot. You know, I got tickets to this this kind of awesome weird thing. I've been a few times. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "What is it?" And he's like, "I see. It's kind of weird, but you know, it's pretty interesting. I'm kind of into it." So I was like, "Okay." And we actually met up at an opening in Chelsea, which I'll get into in a minute, and headed over to this venue, Pangea, which I had never been to on like Second Avenue. Kind of like, it must have been like old, like Yiddish theater. And it was a performance by this woman, Suzanne Mack. It was like a cabaret performance of old American songs, like sea shanties and things like that. Like just a single singer accompanied by a
What?
piano, dinner theater style. Like you sit down, you order dinner, and then the dinner comes and the music starts. About an hour long set. And this is Mark Palotz, Hauser and Wirth partner, and kind of runs their American operations of Hauser and Wirth. It's his wife. So there was a number of
Wow.
art world folks in attendance. I saw Nicola Vassell there. I saw Nicole Eisenman, the great artist, a lot of Hauser and Wirth staff members. Who else? A whole bunch of people, but super weird. One of the weirdest things I have done in New York in a hot minute, but in the most positive way. It was incredible. I haven't been to a cabaret performance in years.
I mean, yeah,
I
I
am a
don't think I
fan.
ever have.
I'm dragging you to the next one. It's like kind of something you have to see to believe it.
I'm in.
Very,
I
very
mean,
cool. Very, very cool. And I know you know, we could wrap up some free stuff. There's been a ton of stuff going on in New York as well. Maybe we'll I'll get into so I was at the opening of Ricky Swallow in New York last night at the Kordansky Gallery. It was kind of he did a walkthrough, this really elegant
Very
artwork,
cool.
super esoteric, super weird. You kind of feel like you're in Matthew Marks. It's just pared down beauty. That was cool. There was also a great opening for one of my favorite artists, Elaine Cameron Weir, last night. Her first presentation at the Listen Gallery. She used to show in New York with JTT and Jasmine, who is the proprietor of JTT, when she came over, was able to bring Elaine's work. I'd actually seen most of this body of work in Elaine's studio last fall at some point in time. Really strong show, great debut on a somewhat
Cool.
larger stage. All the homies showed up for that. Like, very, very cool. Very, very cool stuff. And yeah, it's been like busy in New York. Things are happening, man.
Really?
Yeah,
I
things
mean,
are happening.
It's been crazy busy over here. I mean, this is traditionally a pretty busy time in New York, the early weeks of March when it sort of warms up. People like start to open their big blockbuster spring shows. But I'm telling you, LA is popping. Like,
what
you
else
know.
Has been going on? You get some Vanity Fair Young Star party, or what was going on?
I did attend the Vanity Fair Young Hollywood party. Thank you very much.
My invite was somehow lost in the mail. Make sure you have my zip code right.
I mean, I felt old there, Benjamin. So it's like, I mean, I was like probably one of the top 10 oldest people there, sort
Whoa,
of deal.
Okay,
Like,
never
you
mind.
know,
don't want to be there.
like it was like so many, you know, very, very famous, TikTok famous, Instagram famous, you know, actors who I just had no idea who they were. Which was really fun because it was just like, well, like clearly Vanity Fair still got it. Like all these like young kids like love like coming to a Vanity Fair party. They were all Instagramming it. So like that's good. We still got the juice, love that, you know. But it was at Bar Marmont, which was great. You know, that's just a wonderful place for a party. I popped into the chateau before for a drink.
Of course,
quite
you
nice.
Did. Of course, you did. Mm-hmm. Any stars I would actually know their names of at this party? Like, or did you meet anyone new to you? Like, and have like a conversation, or were you just checking out the scene, kind of 30,000 foot view?
I was mostly just checking out the scene. I had a nice little chat with Charles Melton, one of the stars of May December, which is a movie I quite enjoyed. He was extremely nice, very nice guy. Lorraine Nicholson, who hosted us at her home.
Love Lorraine. She's
week.
Such a cool person.
Yeah, for the show that Jen Mock put together. She was there, which was great. You know, but like I said, mostly just TikTok famous people I'd never heard of. Well,
okay.
That's cool.
I'm gonna pass on that. but you did you really sopped up every bit of Freeze LA. And since we last recorded, I think a week ago today, Friday last, right? You had some other events you hit. I went to one birthday dinner and that was it for me. You were there as well. You went off into the night. I went home to like pack and get my head right. I'm still tired from that experience a week ago. What else went on that night? Because there were like two or three parties I wanted to get to, but it just wasn't going to happen. What did you hit?
Well, I made my way over to a home. I think it was in like Holmby Hills area. There's a little birthday soiree for Christie's. Alex Marshall, good friend of the pod. This house was crazy. It was like the craziest house I've ever been in. It was like this like insane like Georgian mansion on the top of a hill.
It was some DJ's house, right?
You know what? It wasn't a DJ. I'm still a little unclear on whose house it was, to be perfectly honest.
It wasn't Alex's. We know that much, right?
It's not Alex's house. Usually he has this party at his house. It was not at his house this year. But you walk in and it's just like the biggest room I've ever been in. You know, it had like multiple bars and it's just like unfathomable that someone could live there. There was like a library in the corner and it was like the least likely place I'd ever read a book in my life. Like that kind of vibe, you know, it's just like insane, like so fucking big.
Was it a rager or what?
Well, I left a little bit on the early side, not that early. I mean, I left like 11:45 and the party was still cooking. Like it was like, I think that it probably peaked around 2 a.m. well after I left.
That's late
but
for LA.
Still, I think it was like an exceptionally late for LA party because the next day I showed up at Jonas Wood's World Series of Art Poker and a number of people there said that they were at the party until 4 in the morning or so, which is quite epic.
And then did you also make it over to our friend and past guest of the pod?
Oh, Liv Barrett?
Liv Barrett's party?
No, I did not make it to her party, unfortunately, and I was really bummed about that. But I made it up to her by stopping by the house on Tuesday to see it. Beautiful home in Los Feliz. There is a bar in the house that is actually like a carved out like bar, like you know, not just like a bar in a corner, but like a full like club thing, which is crazy.
That doesn't
Small,
surprise
but,
me. That doesn't surprise. Disco ball or no?
No, because it was built in during Prohibition. So like they would have people over to their house in Prohibition and like they could pretend like they were at a bar.
Oh, that's chic.
Like a very small, classy bar within the home. That she's dubbed the bar Olivia's, which is great. So I got to go over. She had some friends over. I saw the house. It was great. Elegantly installed hang as well. A number of works by Tom Burr. A John McCracken that was quite impressive. Very, very cool hang in there. So, yeah, I also, like I said, I made it to Jonas's poker game, also former guest on the podcast. That was all. It's always a trip. Like, that was crazy.
What set that scene for me? Like, I see it on Instagram. I don't really understand. Is this like, it seems like it's like 100 people playing poker. How does it work? What's going on?
So you enter, and I wasn't playing. I was just like watching. You enter this sort of nondescript building in Hollywood. There's no sign. There's no door, nothing. You know, you give your name. Some people shuffle some papers. You're let in. it's this new private members club. I can't remember the name of it. They're sort of soft launching with this poker tournament. And you go in, there's a long bar, and then there's another room in the back. And basically, there's like maybe 10 tables of 10 people each, just fucking, grinding it on the table. And it's just, it's fun because it really is all artists and dealers with the occasional movie star, entertainment person like thrown in there. It's really fun.
It's very cool. I would never. What's the buy-in for this? Do you know?
It's 500, which is too much for me. I would just
Oh,
lose it.
I would lose $500. That might be fun.
It's probably worth it, honestly, just like to get a chance to play these guys. The problem is they're so fucking good because these guys play poker
Yeah, that
all year
$500 would
long.
last me all of 7 minutes, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like if we like practiced a little bit, got a New York game going, got our shit together, I think then we could
Well, you
maybe
know,
hold it.
a friend of the pod that has a little bit of extra time on his hands these days, maybe we could hire Jeff Poe as our personal poker coach, and
Yeah, that's a great
he
idea.
could tutor us over the course of a year, and we can like do a whole little series of us getting ready to play in Jonas's game. I like that idea. I like that idea.
Okay, yeah, let's get Poe, let's bang his line and set that up because that's a great idea.
You have any good meals in LA? I'm really remiss. I think LA is a great eating town. I mean, first of all, you have all the great ethnic food. You went to that great cevicheria. You went to the other in the last pod. And so beyond that, but then it has great new restaurants, some cutting-edge chefs, obviously a great sushi scene. I basically just went to art dinners. And like, that's not how you judge a city's food. Like they were all kind of standing dinners, really. Not great eats. Did you get to have any good eats since you've been there in a little bit more of a quiet time?
You know what I did? Because yeah, the great upside of staying longer is that you have these nights where you can actually go to a restaurant that you want to check out. Not that the art dinners are bad or anything. It's just
But they were,
ate a
except for
lot.
your birthday dinner, they all sucked.
Okay, fine, good point. But on Sunday night, me and Max LaVey and Lomax's own Alexander Shulin
Ooh,
went
dangerous
to
threesome.
We went to La Dolce Vita, which is a new slash old Beverly Hills red sauce joint. Shout out Joe Cole for the bat phone for that one, because it's really, really hard to get a res there. I got lunch with someone who a very high up person in the entertainment industry at the Polo Lounge the following day. Told him that I went to La Dolce Vita, and he was like, whoa, like how'd you get this res? How'd you like, so it's a tough table. We get in there, it's like Carbone vibes, but like classier. It's like red tuxedos. You walk in, you're directed to the bar. They make you a very elegant martini, and then all of the seating is just booths, and all the booths have a plaque of one of La Dolce Vita's like old school regulars, because this was just like an old school Italian joint in Beverly Hills for decades. It was bought 2 years ago, totally refurbished, and now it's been like carbonized basically. Guess whose booth we were at?
You haven't told me, so I have no idea whose.
The Reagans. We're at the Reagans booth.
Oh, let's fucking go. Let's go. You know what? That reminds me of something that I wanted to mention on the podcast last week, and I totally blanked on it. I went to go have a meeting in this like weird building in Beverly Hills, like right off Rodeo Drive, called the Writers and Artists Building. And it was
Oh,
very cool.
yeah.
It was very, very cool. And this building, I sent you the plaque from it. I didn't know this history, but it was like it was right in our wheelhouse. It was a building that was built in like the mid 1920s, and it was kind of like a hideout slash office space for a bunch of Hollywood royalty of that era and then on. And I learned that past like tenants that had offices there were like Clark Gable, Cary Grant, Charlie fucking Chaplin, Billy
Let's
Wilder,
go.
Jack Lemmon, our personal hero, Jack Nicholson. And some others. And I thought it was a neat place to go have a business meeting while in LA. Highly recommend it.
Totally, totally. So yeah, La Dolce Vita, we ordered the hits. We got some veal parm. We got some, what else? Some calamari, some like, all the hits. The food was very good. It was like very, very good red sauce joint
Do you
food.
think we're at the end of the at the end? It would make sense that now LA is finally catching on to this. Maybe at the tail end of the era of the revival of the red sauce kind of Italian thing.
Yeah, this kind of felt like the end of the line for it. It was like, okay, we've gotten here. It's in Beverly Hills. It's fancier. It's like we can't really, improve on this, right? Like we did it. Like that's what it felt like. I was like, okay, like we're good. Like no more of these. Like we like our Carbone. LA has the Dolce Vita. We're good.
It's
That's what
great
it felt
once in a while.
like.
Like, I love that food. It's
Yeah.
very easy, but there's something somewhat infantile about desiring that kind of like, I'd say cheesy sweet palate of Italian food. I'm ready for the revival of like the 90s era, like traditional Tuscan, you know, trattoria style cooking, but at a high end, which I would say in certain elements, Torsi kind of approaches a little bit, slightly lighter, slightly more refined, ingredient-driven cooking. Like, I'm down for that. I want to go to, like, a real Tuscan steakhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be fun. I think that's kind of what Nancy Silverton sort of does with Mozza, right? Like, that's kind of the vibe there.
Yeah, but that's like, more of a new, yes, a little bit, but like there's something in the 90s where it's more cozy. We're talking like a boar ragu on homemade tagliatelle, like that kind of like kind of cooking.
Yeah, that would be pretty sick. I would be really down for that. Good point.
Just something I'm thirsting for.
I had one more meal on Monday after a great studio visit with Jonas Wood, which was lovely. My wife and I went out to the beach. We went to the Santa Monica Pier with Lady.
Cute,
and
she rode the carousel for the first time.
So much fun. And then because we were beachside, we decided to check out this little place in Venice Beach called Felix that has been recommended to me a number of times. And it was spectacular. This place really rips. It's like, it's kind of like what you were talking about, like sort of like very traditional Italian food, like, you know, all like, you know, handmade pastas being made right next to you. You can like look in and watch the pasta being cut and rolled. And it's really, really fabulous. We got, you know, a really incredible tagliatelle, you know, a brilliant steak with like incredible crispy potatoes, some squash blossoms that were fucking epic. Artichoke. It was great. Felix is, I mean, it's far out in the west side. I get it. But like, if you're around there, it's a winner.
That sounds good. I'm into that. And you mentioned in passing, you had like a power lunch on Monday. Was that on Monday that you had a power lunch at Sunset Tower?
I did. No. I had a power lunch at the Polo Lounge.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. Love it.
I mean, it felt really great. Stephen A. Smith from ESPN like walked in halfway through looking a little confused, which was great for anyone who, you know, watches sports and listens to this podcast. I'm not sure if they're already.
There's six of them. It's cool.
Yeah. I won't say who with, but a very, very wonderful person in the entertainment industry who's also an art collector.
And I hear a friend of the pod even maybe.
This is true, which is very exciting. But I did go to the Sunset Tower the following evening with a friend of the pod, Sebastian Gladstone, and his artist Tristan Unrau. Who's having a pop-up show in New York in September, which is very exciting. Tristan's great. We kind of knew everyone in the room, which was nuts. Like, 5 p.m., like Sunset Tower, just table hopping, which was sick. Super fun.
I love that for
yeah,
you.
I mean, like,
love that for you.
Yeah. Name. You know, we love a tower bar table hop.
Speaking of a power dinner, I'm pretty excited for this evening. Friend of ours, Calvin Marcus, has a show that I've already previewed that opens to the public this evening at the Karma Gallery. It's an incredible show, Nate Freeman. I can't wait for you to get back and see it. It is so, so, so good. Just a great evolution for Calvin. We obviously had dinner with him, you and I and some others in L.A., at the most, for me, the most iconic of right now, Musso and Frank L.A. restaurant. And the dinner tonight is at Superiority Burger, like basically my favorite restaurant in New York right now, all things considered. And even though I have an embargo, a ban, really, on going out on Shabbat and going to an art opening and a dinner, I am excited to go celebrate Calvin and to go eat some Superiority Burgers and hopefully a lot of their delicious desserts.
Mm-hmm. Having been to the rare Superiority Burger full buyout, they have to announce it on Instagram like days in advance just to make sure people.
Because you'd be pissed if you were like, you know, you had that in your book. Oh, we'll go line up at 5 on Friday.
Yeah, I get it, but like Brooks and the team at Superiority Burger are really, really, you know, awesome to, you know, the local gallery scene, and you know, Karma's just a few blocks away, and so I think it's going to be an epic night. Calvin, I'm so sorry to not be there. I know that a ton of people from LA flew out for the occasion. You know, it's a tight-knit crew out here. You know, the artists and dealers stick together, and they came out to support Calvin, which is really cool.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. You know, one thing we haven't talked about at all, that we're at the tail end, at the very end now, they're done, they're drinking, of an auction week in London. And boy, it wasn't pretty out there, my friend. Some of the numbers look okay, but especially for younger artists that have emerged in the post-pandemic free money era, I'm not going to call any of them out. It just doesn't seem fair. I'm not in that kind of mood right now. But we saw a lot of buy-ins, a lot of things sold under the reserve or underneath the low estimate. It was a real reckoning, and I don't think the auction houses came out smelling very good. And then we have like a whole other set of mid-season sales in New York next week. And it seems like people are down to like just sell things at a loss. They're like, okay, just get, you know, I'm sick of storing it. Let's let it go.
Is that really it? Because the economy, you know, is bouncing back a little bit. Bitcoin is back, baby. I don't care.
Bitcoin is back, but not today. But you know, over the past week, it's been inching up. Here's the thing. I'm gonna give an example. And I hate to make it personal, but I'll give an example. I'm going to leave names of artists and counterparties out. I sold a young artist's work. I'm not proud of it, but you know, I needed the money. A picture I had bought for $5,000 or $6,000 for $50,000 about this time last year. And that's the kind of game. Like, I'm an early in, early out guy. I'm too poor to say no to an offer like that, to be honest. That work is now up. That exact same picture is now up in one of the sales at an estimate of, I think, $8,000 to $12,000 or $10,000 to $15,000. And I called the guy I bought. I was like, "What the fuck, dude? What, you know, I hate to see you take a loss. What are you doing?" He's like, "Listen, man, you know, all this stuff in storage, moving it from here and there." And it's like, I'm just starting over. I'm just starting fresh. Just clearing the decks a little bit. And I think that might not be just anecdotal in this case, but I think that might cover a lot of what we're seeing.
I mean, I understand that. That makes sense from a financial perspective. But like, what is that going to do to the markets of not just these young artists, but young artists in general?
It's going to kill a lot of them. You know, God, how specific do I want to be here? A young artist that I am very supportive of, a youngish artist who recently had a solo exhibition at the Whitney Museum, I think has a big institutional show coming up on the West Coast. A work of his that's held by a major collector in our favorite town of Greenwich, Connecticut. Is going on the block for like pennies on the dollar. And I don't think it's a real hot market for this artist. It's more of an institutional level, really ideas-based artist, not a trendy painter. So I don't expect the work will do terribly well. And I think in that case, someone like that's just like, I got a lot of stuff. Let's just clear the decks, as I just said. God, it's a terrible phrase. So I think that is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't like a real test in the market. We have to wait until May for that, you know.
But I mean, no, it's not. But it also kind of is. Like for me, the health of the art market is predicated in the day sales and the mid-season sales. It's not. It's not in the big major evening auctions, which everyone writes up in the press as a test of the market, because there's a whole bunch of shenanigans going on in those sales.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's pray for the art market.
Well, listen, on the positive side, I see in almost all these cases as for those that have a little bit of cojones, that have a confidence in their own vision for the long time, and that are assembling real collections, you can find great things to extend the vision of that collection if it fits at fantastic prices. So like, this is when real collectors are able to double down and get a whole bunch of stuff. It just isn't so healthy for the market at large or for specific artists' careers at times.
Very good point. That is exactly what, you know, people should be doing right now. What else are you looking forward to over the weekend? I am, of course, just inundated with movie stars and glitz and glamour.
I mean, you got a big night coming up for you on Sunday, right? I mean,
it's a big one.
Yeah, are you going to take it easy before then? Are you going to kind of rest your body and your soul, for that matter, before you get thrown into the maelstrom of the Vanity Fair Oscars party?
I have to showface a few things tonight, just sort of like, you know, put my Vanity Fair hat on and not even report, really, just be a representative of the magazine at some industry soirees. Tomorrow I will take it easy. I'm going to check out the opening of our friend Olivia Babin's clearing gallery and then just chill after that. Because, yeah, Sunday, you know, the awards start at like 3 p.m. out here. So
that's right.
Yeah. So I got to be, you know, monkey suited, like ready to go by like noon. Like, it's going to be
I don't want to blow it, but if you can say, are you being dressed by anyone again this year?
Maybe I should try leave the reveal. I think I should leave the reveal.
Your calm. I'm not sure what my early next week looks like, but it'd be great to do like maybe Monday morning, as soon as your writing is done for this and it's been published, you can do the more informal recap of the evening's events here on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things will be redacted, but sure.
Okay. I'll just get it over drinks then. It's fine. Ugh, no fun. No one listens anyway, bro. It's all good.
Okay, good point. Yeah. No, we can do a recap on Monday, and I'll say everything I can. For sure. Yeah,
for the rest of my weekend, like, I'm doing an art thing tonight. I think that's it. I might have to go to a viewing first thing tomorrow morning. I'm supposed to go see the New York soccer team play at Yankee Stadium tomorrow, but it's going to be really raining, and I'm just not sure if I'm that big a sports fan.
New York has a soccer team?
Yeah, who knew? They call it football, maybe? NYFC? Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. It's not my thing.
No idea.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I'll be relatively art light, I think, before it kicks up all again next week. You're not going to be here, but our good friend MK is in town from London. Mm-hmm. He texted me from the opening of TAFAF Maastricht, saying that he was gobbling down oysters by the dozen.
Jealous.
That'll be a nice meal that we'll report on. But yeah, other than that, just I'm 45 years old. I'm still in recovery from running around LA. Like, I'm on fumes. I am gonna make it to Calvin's dinner. I'm committed to it. If it wasn't a superiority burger, I might not be as committed as I am. Hopefully it's not seated, because I can't deal with that vibe. But other than that, I get the IV guy coming over. I'm gonna get a drip. I'm gonna refresh.
Get the drip, get down to Calvin's, report back. I wish I were there. Can't wait to hear about it.
All right, people. We will we'll see you hopefully in person next week, Nate. Good luck. Mm-hmm. God bless out there. Keep yourself, you know, keep on the straight and narrow. We're depending on you.
Staying hydrated.
All right. Nota bene. Out.